from the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. Welcome to Indigenous in the News. We'll be bringing you the current updates that matter to us all. From the Shakers and the Makers in Indian Country, I'm your host, Larry Kay from the Ho-Chunk Nation, along with Gary Wilcox from the Powhatan Nation. On today's show, we're excited to welcome Mr. Aku Rodriguez from the Mescalero Apache Nation. Aku is a talented producer and entrepreneur. We'll dive into his journey on how it all started and his latest projects and explore what it takes to master aerial photography and videography from air, land, and sea. His company, M-Rod Drones, specializes in delivering stunning visuals from every angle. All this and more, but first, the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. On his last day in office, President Joe Biden commuted the sentence of Leonard Peltier. Peltier had already spent nearly 50 years in prison for the murders of two FBI agents in South Dakota in 1975, a crime he denies doing. The 80-year-old AIM activist is now living in his homeland of North Dakota and has not granted interview requests from many news outlets, including National Native News. However, the Associated Press's Graham Brewer was given access recently, and so far is the only journalist to interview Peltier after his release. I talked to Brewer, a Cherokee Nation member and longtime reporter, about his visit with Peltier.
He was in good spirits. I met him at his new house on the Turtle Mountain Reservation. Has a really nice little two-bedroom home with an office where he's planning to write his next book.
Brewer says Peltier gets around with a walker or cane and is eager to start painting, something he did while in prison. After years of campaigning and lobbying for freedom, Peltier confessed that he began to lose hope.
He was pretty convinced that he was never going to be released and that he would die in prison. One of the details he told me that really stayed with me is just even on the plane ride home, he kept having these feelings that the plane would disappear and it would all be a dream and he would be back in his cell.
While he enjoys support from many in the Native and international community, Peltier acknowledges that there are those who oppose his commutation. One is the FBI, while the other are relatives and supporters of Anime Pictou Aquash, an AIM activist whose body was found on the Pine Ridge Reservation in 1976. Denise Pictou Maloney has long accused Peltier of killing her mother. Brewer says he asked Peltier about this opposition.
Yeah, they're still very unhappy, the federal law enforcement, that he was commuted and able to be released. In terms of Anime Pictou Aquash's family, they're still very much convinced that Mr. Peltier had some knowledge of her death or was involved in some way, even though two other men were eventually convicted and incarcerated for that crime. He was very clear that, you know, he considered her a friend and a colleague, that he had no knowledge of her death and was very happy that the two men who were convicted of it were tried and put away.
And how he'll spend his final years, Brewer says Peltier expressed a passion for working with the next generation of Native American activists.
He really wants to train them on the threats that they'll face and encourage them to just show up and be present and protest the taking away of any kind of land rights or indigenous self-determination or tribal sovereignty or treaty rights. He thinks that's still a really important part of being an activist today and that those threats are still very much alive.
Meanwhile, some Peltier supporters say that he deserves a full pardon and that President Trump should grant one. Brewer says that possibility wasn't touched on much in their conversation, but Peltier maintains his innocence. He had been sentenced to two consecutive life terms for the agents' deaths, plus 7 years for an armed escaped attempt in 1979. And indigenous entrepreneurs are meeting in Las Vegas this week for the National Center for the American Indian Enterprise Development Conference. Dr. R.D. Plato, managing director of Yellowtail Healthcare, a national healthcare group, wants the Trump administration to be cautious about federal health cuts.
There's an incredible lot of anxiety because it seems like there's not a lot of planning going into these cuts. It's like, let's jump in and just start swinging the machete and cutting stuff. So that keeps you up at night.
The acting head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Brian Mercier, also attended, telling people there are opportunities under the Trump administration for Native entrepreneurs, especially in energy and economic development. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
From the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida, I'm Gary Wilcox. And today's show, we welcome Aku Rodriguez, director, producer, entrepreneur, and owner of Soviet Films. Hello, Aku. Welcome to Indigenous in the News.
Brothers, how are you doing?
Hi, Aku. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
Great to have you on the show.
Yes, great. Yes. Honored to be here. Thank you.
Yes, yes.
So let's start with an introduction, and then we'll talk about your journey.
You know, I started my life as a, you know, musician, and then got into film. Right now, I'm a co-director for the Latin and Native American Film Festival.
Nice.
And I'm in a production company called Soviet Films. And, you know, I still work in the studio making music.
How old were you when it all started?
Oh, I was back in my teens, you know.
Okay.
We came from a poor family, so mm-hmm. music was a really big stepping stone mm-hmm. for us. You know, I had a guitar passed down from my great grandfather, and well, the only thing that really hurt the guitar is the strings. You know, the strings they made back then weren't as used to the ones that we have now. So, and that was it. I just learned how to play guitar by ear. Never went to school, nothing. Mm-hmm. I could just hear it. A tune, and you know, just have some of the brothers, you know, play me a riff and just jump onto it.
Yeah. So, our audience doesn't know it, but I had a chance to meet Aku a few weeks ago back at the Indigenous Peoples Cultural Festival in Orlando, and I learned a lot about you, but I didn't know that you mentioned, and you did mention that music was your first passion. What kind of music did you play?
You know, when I first started out, I just, you know, we grew up with some country music,
okay.
you know, Merle Haggard. And then after that, we just started getting into, you know, some Beatles. And then after the Beatles, it was more like some Zeppelin and Pink Floyd. And
follow the trend.
It just kind of shifted, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the name of your band?
It was the Spoonfed Tribe.
Oh, okay. Nice. Oh,
yeah.
You had a chance to play in front of some big audiences like, you know, the Bob Marley Festival, Lollapalooza, Mars Volta. Which one of those brings back one of the most memories for you?
You know, I'd have to say it was more the Bob Marley Festival.
Yeah.
You know, the Lollapalooza was fun, but it just seemed, you know, it really wasn't a connection of family, right? You were there, you did your show. You met all the other brothers, you know, and it just seemed like you were a number, right? But with the Bob Marley, it was always a handshake, hugs, and hey, brother, how you doing? And hey, man, check this out. A new thought came in. So, you know, all I got to say is it was a family. The Bob Marley Festival was a really big, beautiful family, and it was great. We jammed with a lot of great musicians. You know, we did the West Coast tour from San Antonio, Texas to
nice.
New Mexico to
nice.
Arizona to California, and that got pretty big. So then they said, hey, we'd like to bring you guys to the East Coast. I said, we're going East Coast here. So yeah, it was really beautiful. It was great. There was great brothers and sisters. I mean, it was, and I mean, just the family vibe. And you know, there was even times where there was bands that couldn't show up. So a bunch of musicians got together.
Nice.
And they're like, yo, man, can you jam this? So, it was just a bunch of us jumping in, jamming Marley songs the whole time.
Let's talk about your short films. How did that all start? And let's start with your first film.
You know, it all started off with that feature film acting, you know. Mm-hmm. I started doing a couple of B-rolls, you know. I was a thug. Most people don't know, but I was a thug on Texas. Was it Chuck Norris's Texas Lone Ranger or Walker, Texas Walker?
Oh, yeah.
And I was just a thug, and they just needed guys to come in. You know, they fed me, they paid me. You don't get credit. You just get your ass whooped by Chuck Norris, right? So nobody knows that, right? But I was just one of those thugs in one of his shows, and, yeah, he whooped my ass. So other than that, you know, I just started getting into more, you know, more of the projects, more of the – you know, behind the scenes, you know, more brothers said, hey, we need this and this.
Right.
I just started learning the, you know, sound department, camera department, gaffing department, lighting, and then just learning how to, you know, produce, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I started working on shows. I did a lot of, like, different shows with Frida, and just started working from there. And then next thing I knew it, people were coming up to me, and you know, documentaries were just starting out, where they were just getting famous, right? Where people were really wanting to do that. And I just jumped on that wagon there, and I jumped on that. And, you know, when I was on tour for about, you know, 10 years of my life, I never spent any of my money. So all of it went back into the bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was done touring, I said, all right, I got a nice little nice little living there. So what can I do with it? So I took a percentage of that, invested it in equipment, and that was it. That was the story.
The start.
You know?
Today, we're speaking with Aku Rodriguez, producer, entrepreneur. He is the owner of Soviet Films and M-Rod Drones. You can visit him at SovietFilms.com and contact him directly at SovietFilms@gmail.com.
Aku, has the cost of production risen drastically since your first film?
You know, that's a great question, brother. It, with everything, you know, with the industry and with any of the industry, right? It all depends on the market, the system. We like to call it the machine, right? the machine, when the machine changes the system, we have to evolve with it, right? I mean, we can protest, but, you know, how far is the protest going to go, you know, right, to make a change, you know? But yes, cost of living has changed. Equipment has changed, locations has changed, you know, airfare, room and board,
right,
you know, but at the same time, we find different ways to really see how we could take a budget and work with it as far as we can go, you know. And I think the most thing with, you know, budgets nowadays is don't over budget it. But kind of sit there right in the middle. Don't lowball yourself, but sit in the middle where you know, okay, I can sacrifice this and this, but when the product is done, it has to be 136%.
Right. Aku, how does your native heritage influence your approach to filmmaking? And let's talk about your current project, Dances with Sacred Ground.
You know, I was raised by my elders, and they, Apache Mescalero and Zapotec heritage, right?
Uh-huh.
So I was raised a different way because they taught us more about the spiritual understanding of what life is, what mother is, what energy is, right? Energy and frequencies, right? So I learned a different knowledge than what other people taught,
right,
and other cultures taught. Some of our tribes refused to you know, go with the casinos. They refused to go with religion beliefs, you know. I didn't realize, but religion had came in and influenced a lot of Native tribes and even influenced the traditions. You know, I'm sure everyone's familiar, you know. It's funny how people are just so aware of kids missing, but you know, what happened to our people? What happened to those kids? Nobody gave it. I'm not going to cuss there, but nobody cared about that. And look what happened, you know, and we survived, went through it. And a lot of our kids, a lot of our Native people, you know, those kids were never found. What happened, you know? And so we were always kept in a way where, you know, they told us, you know, we're going to teach you the old traditions, not this new age tradition thing.
Right.
So, you know, with everything that's happening, you know, you got governments, systems, laws, treaties, you know, all this nonsense attempting to hold its merit. But when they come and invade your territory with their machine, what do? You know, the fossil fuel industry came and invaded our land up there. And we have, you know, 5-6 beautiful natural springs. And the farmers, the people survive off that water. There's a lake that survives fishing. You go fishing there. I mean, it's a whole entire ecosystem that is developed there. And the thing is with that system, you fracture that. You fracture the next towns about 100 miles away, you know? So, I mean, what do you do to a tyrant who wrote the book? Like, how do you fight that? Or do you even fight it? So I just knew what I always knew. You know, I moved to that location and not but a year, it just, boom, it's like the fossil fuel hit in there full force. And you know, I asked the ancestors, you know, was this my mission? Was this what I was supposed to do, you know? And I just documented it. I documented every single thing. And, you know, I asked, like, you know, what do I name this? What do I call this, you know, project or this, you know, this medicine?
Right.
And the only thing that came to me was Dances with Sacred Ground. I mean, it's like, that's what I'm doing. I'm dancing with it. I'm helping Mother Earth there to fight off a machine that you know, doesn't really give a about anything or nothing. All it is that green piece of paper that with dead presidents on it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the, you know. And I'm going to tell you, you know, up there filming, you know, it was hard. I was followed. I was harassed. I was pulled over. What are you doing? Well, what the do you think I'm doing? I'm documenting what you guys are, you know, and it's a machine.
Yeah.
And anyone who comes forth and attempts to stop that machine, you will be confronted. And that's one thing I've faced. That's one thing I'm still facing, you know. But there's one thing I learned, you know, was always taught to us, is that freedom is given. And freedom is something, no matter what, even if you look at history, not even history here, but history back in, you know, before we were even existed, people fought for freedom. You know, and even my elder would say, you know, I would rather die on my feet, not on my knees. I respect that. I respect all of that. And I've taken my craft in my lens. I've taken this weapon, you know, it's like, it's our weapon now. We have a weapon. A camera's a weapon now. We can show the truth. And yeah, of course, you know, we're going to get messed with. We're going to be, you know, I mean, they did that to us back in the day. What makes you think they're not going to do it now, you know?
Right.
So I just took that art and that craft and said, you know what? We can do something. And even if we can't, we can show. We have it documented. We have it out there. And the people know exactly what's going on. And to me, that's the greatest gift that was given to me. You know, I even asked the elders, I asked them, I said, I'm going into film. What do you think? They said, I don't know. You're the first person in our tribe to do that. So 3 days later, they came back and said, yeah, you have a very interesting mission. And I said, that's all I needed to know.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead. How do you balance traditional storytelling methods with modern filmmaking techniques?
You know, that's a good question, brother. I think it's all the identity, you know. To me, I always see every project as a spiritual awakening. There's a beautiful gift in everything that all of us do. It's are our eyes open to see the signs, to see the messages, see the beauty that's there for all of us, and being able to combine those two, I call them mediums, right? To combine those two mediums together is a craft. You have to find ways and tools to say, okay, is this gonna work? Does this vibe, right? Does this connect to each other? Does it make sense? And, you know, you do it, and then when you see it, it's like, you know, no, it doesn't. You know, that doesn't work. So then you find other techniques or other different methods to add or take away, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know it, you've taken these pieces of a big puzzle and said, you know, I used all these puzzles, but none of the puzzles worked for this puzzle. But this right. puzzle from this other one that doesn't belong here works.
Oh, okay.
So it's, you know, it's just yeah. that, you know, that vibe. It's like that energy you're wanting to connect. And not only that, but, you know, I don't see myself really as a filmmaker, you know, in our traditions, you know, we're storytellers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're storytellers. All I got now is instead of the campfire and hanging around the peace pipe, I got a camera and the lens, and I'm out moving and doing stories, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about the drone business.
Well, I'd have to say that's an interesting business now.
I like it.
You know, back in the day, it was nice. You get a nice drone, you're able to go out there and fly and do what you need to do. But, you know, excuse me here, but you got idiots that go out
right.
and just, yeah. you know, they screwed it up for Wreck all it. Of us, as always, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not what it used to be, you know, the drone system now. I mean, it's about to, they're debating if they're going to make it illegal for any individual to have a drone. Now only officers, military, what do you call those, rescue people have sure. drones, right? So, you know, it was fun. I mean, sure. everything was great. Nothing was regulated, right?
Mm-hmm. In the beginning.
Now everything's regulated.
It's changing.
Oh man, you can't fly in certain locations, and you're like, "Well, I'm not gonna fly over there." Well, yeah, you're in a frequency zone, so you can't fly anywhere past 200 miles. And it's like, "Well, yeah, well, what do I do now? I can't do anything, right?"
Yeah.
So I'm just old school. I just go get a Jimmy Jib that's 34 feet long.
There you go.
There's my drone.
What's the name of your company?
Oh, it's M-Rod Drones.
I have a Phantom 4 if you ever need a drone.
Hey, there you go. That's a great drone, man. That's a great drone. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That is a drone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, you know, you have batteries, right? You get mm-hmm. batteries that I don't know about now, but back in the day, they lasted 20 minutes. Then they'd go down to 15. Oh. And then at three months to two quarters, 6 months, the battery's dead. And you got to go buy another $300, $200 battery. And you're talking about a business that requires at least 15 batteries, right? Oh, one day. 15 Man. Batteries for one day. So that's a profit. Yeah, and then they die every 6 months or every 30, or there's a default, and you're like, okay, hold on. So, yeah.
Interesting. Today, yeah. We're speaking with Aku Rodriguez, producer, entrepreneur. What advice would you give to other indigenous creators aspiring to enter the film industry?
You know, all I would say is don't give up. You got to keep going. You have a spirit, keep that spirit alive. And no matter what people say or do, slander, put you down, call you whatever, who cares what they think or what they say? You are who you are. And it's you as this great spirit that's going to make you who you are, not anybody else. And no matter what happens, you know, keep the fight, keep fighting, invest, think smart. Know when there's an opportunity, understand that opportunity, and know if that person is a nice person or just a dark person.
Yeah.
Know that right there, mm-hmm. because the choices you make from that one choice is going to put you in where you're going to be or who you're going to be. And at the same time, you know, sometimes it does take to know that dark person, to understand what is needed and what is possible.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Salute. Aku, thank you for stopping by today and introducing yourself to us all. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Man, thank you, brothers, and I appreciate it, man. You guys keep it alive. Thank you.
Hey, it was a pleasure to have you here with us today and talking about the great work that you're doing. Brother, really appreciate you. Thank you so much, and please keep up what you're doing, man.
Yeah.
Always, brothers. Thank you, man. Guys, be good.
Yeah, stay in touch. Safe journeys. Sweet.
Nice.
Today, we're speaking with Aku Rodriguez, producer, entrepreneur. He is the owner of Sobeit Films and MROD Drones. You can visit him at sobeitfilms.com and contact him directly at sobeitfilms@gmail.com. Music provided by the Spoonfed Tribe. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous in the News and supporting us and our entrepreneurs. Indigenous in the News has been produced by Larry Kay. Our engineer is Paul Salvatore. Our theme music is composed by Lenny Long. Today's show has been recorded at the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. National Native News is provided by Native Voice One with Antonio Gonzalez. Come visit us at Indigenous in Music and Arts to hear all of our past shows and learn all about our great programs that we provide. Until next time, from all of us here at Indigenous in the News, have yourself a wonderful week and safe journeys. Indigenous in the News is a production of Indigenous in Music and Arts.